This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sunday looks like a chance for the Washington football team to get going on offense. We will break down some of Dallas's defensive deficiencies, and they are bountiful, coming up at 12:18. Welcome back. We're G&D. You're locked into the Fan. It is noon, and you know what that means. It is time for your Beltway Blitz, the stories and sports you care the most about, jammed into one segment, so let's get right to it. Pete Haley covers the Washington football team for NBC Sports Washington. Pete, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was your question when I listened back yesterday to Ron Rivera that got a lot of ire, which was Rivera went on record saying he didn't have a cutoff point for Dwayne Haskins, but he actually used that exact quote saying there is a cutoff point for Dwayne Haskins, and now people are parsing that up and frustrated by it. Can you kind of give us an idea of what went down?
Yeah, sure, Grant. I was like fourth or fifth in the question line on Zoom yesterday, and I was going to ask something pretty generic, but I decided to ask a pointed question and just wanted to see what Ron would say. So I asked, is there a cutoff point for Kyle Allen like there was for Dwayne Haskins, you know, using the exact words that Ron did? And Ron got pretty testy with me, which is probably the first time I've really pushed his button that way, but he was angry. He was saying, I did not have a cutoff point for Dwayne like you kind of set up. And I guess I get what he was saying to an extent. Like, he was taking it as literally that, like, this date, Dwayne has to prove himself, and if he didn't, then he was going to be benched. Ron was saying, no, I didn't have that. And I think he's saying the same thing for Kyle, that it's more about what he's seeing versus there is a drop-dead time, was another phrase Ron used. But it does look rough for Ron when you can just Google cutoff point and Dwayne Haskins, and 100 stories come up where Ron is quoted as using that phrase. So if I give him the benefit of the doubt, then you can kind of agree or at least understand what he was saying. But for a guy who's had some contradictory messages, that was a really weird exchange. And I wasn't really prepared for that. So I would have loved to ask the follow-up, but I was just kind of taken aback by the whole thing and was a little bit surprised by his strong denial of it.
Pete, the NFL and the stats people track hundreds of receivers. Among those hundreds, Logan Thomas has the third worst separation score of any player in the league, running back, tight end, wide receiver, otherwise. He was targeted 8 times a game through the first 3 weeks. That's precipitously dropped off as running back targets have increased, starting with the Baltimore game where they put up 190 yards and could have been 13 points with a missed field goal, ended up being 10. It seems to be an offensive philosophy change to less of Logan Thomas, which I think is good, and more of their running backs, which maybe gives them an advantage. You expect more of that going forward?
Definitely. We all know where Kyle Allen came from, and we all know the running back he had in Carolina. He targeted Christian McCaffrey 8.5 times a game when he was starter last year. And, he doesn't have Christian here, but he has two guys who can do that similar stuff out of the backfield. He likes the mismatch problems that McKissick and Gibson create. So I think it's going to be a ton of targets for both those guys. J.D. McKissick, I mean, you can't get too excited because of who he is, but he has been a bit of a spark the past couple weeks. He's really impressed me running the ball. He seems kind of like that Chris Thompson mold where it felt like every time he gave the ball to Chris when he was healthy, you could pretty much mark it down for 6 or 7 yards. Like, I would love to see Gibson break one, but it does seem like they found something in McKissick where he can be a dependable running back or receiver and just kind of get them into those second and short, third and short, second and medium situations where that was important for them last week against New York. That helped them be a lot more effective on third down. So Logan Thomas, I love what he can do in the red zone. I don't necessarily love what he can do in the middle of the field. So hopefully they continue to use Logan properly, let him try and be the guy to cap drives, but give the ball to McKissick and Gibson through the air to let those be the ones who sustain the drives.
Pete, give me a state of the union at wide receiver with the injuries. Chris Russell named two guys from the practice squad that might play this weekend that I have to Google.
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny you said that. I wrote a whole guide to the Washington receivers for this week, and one of the players, Tony Brown, I'm pretty sure, I did some hard research, I don't even think he has a Wikipedia page. Like, you know how irrelevant of a NFL player you have to be to not have a Wikipedia page? But Tony Brown seems to not have one. He's an undrafted guy from Colorado who they picked up just before the year. And then Jeff Badette, who is from Oklahoma, he's got 4.3 speed, sub-4.3 speed. He actually played in the XFL for the Dallas Renegades. His old coach, Bob Stoops, took him fourth overall in the skill player part of that draft. He didn't do a ton for them. He had 16 catches in however many games they played. But he's a short, speedy guy. And one funny nugget on him, he ran in that, like, 40-yard dash competition about a year ago that I think Dominique Rogers-Cromartie set up. And he won $25,000 for that. But the check didn't clear. Shocker, that 40-yard dash was an entire scam. So Jeff Badette is very fast, but he's out $25,000 from that race. But hopefully the game check he should get for Sunday helps offset
that. Wait, is that confirmed? Hold on, because that was a hilarious thing that we talked about at the time, and we said, yeah, I'm sure this will go well. So is that real that he said he never got paid for that?
Yeah, so he was with the Vikings last offseason, I think in their mini camps, and he told the TwinCities.com, some reporter there, that he got $25,000. He didn't win. He lost in the first round, but every participant was guaranteed at least $25,000. So then he was like, all right, I have this check. I'm going to go cash it. And the bank said, the check you're trying to cash? That account has nothing in it, sir. So he's just calling it a total scam. He's like, you know what? That thing was a complete scam. I think he said he still had it in his wallet at the time in case it ever came through. But I don't think Jeff Badette is ever going to see that money.
Pete, real quick. This Washington offense, we know they limit their own ceiling. They're under-talented. There's not much dynamic going on. We all know that. But this Dallas defense is super horrendous. This is the incredibly movable object against whatever the opposite of that is. I mean, like, everything about these two units is terrible. Can Washington take advantage of how bad Dallas's defense is?
Well, speaking of the wide receivers we just talked about, it's going to be tough. Like, Terry McLaurin, I think, can definitely get his, but can maybe Cam Sims be another dynamic option in the receiving game? I'm not exactly sure. But Dallas, their pass defense is fine. Their run defense is 31st, I think, in the league, giving up 170 yards per game. They've given up a couple, like, 200-plus performances. And I think the pass defense is okay because people just run the ball at will against them. So maybe, I feel like every time I've come on this show, I've talked about Gibson having a breakout game. He kind of had one against, I think that was Baltimore, but that was more of a receiving breakout game. Maybe this can finally be the game where he breaks one loose on the ground like Kenyon Drake did on Monday night. So I don't know, Danny, if this is going to be the 35-point outburst, but I do think, like, if they don't score 24 points this weekend, I think there's going to be a lot of guys on that offense a bit more under fire than they are right now. Scott Turner's really got to come up with this team to take advantage of this because everybody is scoring against Dallas. You do not want to be the one team that does not score against Dallas.
Yeah. Maybe you don't have to go drop 35 with this group, but to your point, you can't be in the teens. There's no reason for that. Pete, thank
Absolutely.
You, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Check him out, NBC Sports Washington. Let's talk some baseball. Byron Kerr, Masson Sports. Maybe we'll get to the Nats here on the back end of the Blitz, but I want to start with World Series Game 2, Byron. 6-4 win for the Rays yesterday. And the local boy done well. Thrilled for Brandon Lau. He played for the Bethesda Big Train here in the area in the Summerwood Bat League. He went to the University of Maryland. He became a star for the Rays this season. And after a tough first couple of rounds, two opposite field home runs last night.
Yeah, first time in, 55 World Series, something like that has happened. So very impressive start for Tampa Bay. And what a difference a day makes. We talked about this yesterday, how I thought, you know, that the Dodgers looked pretty good. Well, now it's a best of five series thanks to Brandon Lau. And the run out that the Rays had to begin that game, going up 5-0, and then watching Blake Snell, you know, pitch a no-hitter for almost five innings as well. So that was a really big turn of events for Tampa Bay, and it exposed, you know, the Dodgers trying to go with the bullpen type start with all those guys, and really Dustin May struggling, not doing very, very well, and obviously other guys like Gonsolin having trouble to start that game as well. They had to use so many pitchers and could not get going against Tampa Bay. So it's a great update for the Rays, and it proves that you know that they deserve to be in this World Series. And now that it's best of five, it's game on, because game three is going to be ridiculous. with Walker Buehler taking on Charlie Morton.
Yeah, you mentioned that Walker Buehler, probably the Dodgers' best starter at this point, is looming there. So I think the Rays had to have game number two if they wanted to make this a series. They got that. Wasn't always, you know, as secure maybe as the Dodgers in game number one, but they did enough, certainly, BK, to win this thing. What's it going to come down to here? Is this a bullpen matchup? Is it you let the Rays get into their matchup game with their pinch run and pinch hit and substituting everybody all over the place? I feel like that's what they want. If you let them get into that, they might have an advantage in this series. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. We talked about how important Mookie Betts was. They were able to kind of slow him down a little bit in game two. If you're going to have an opportunity against any team, you can get to the top of their order not on base. That is huge. You know, concern right now for Nick Anderson, the pitcher for the Rays, and he's not using his fastball as well as he had in the regular season, and he's using his curveball more. Even though he got the win last night, he's been struggling to get the fastball to spin like he wants. And Pete Fairbanks, you know, that was a 1-2 punch for them. They both allowed runs last night, so that's a concern for them. So I think it's, you know, we've talked about this a lot with the Nationals, and the bullpens are going to be so critical because you can get through four or five innings with your starters, maybe six or seven if you got a really good starter. But it's going to come down to the bullpens in the late innings, and because there's so many monster bats on both sides, guys can hit home runs and really change the complexion of the game. So, yeah, it is going to be the bullpens and see how, you know, Anderson needs his time off and whether Kevin Cash is going to decide to use these guys in back-to-back games, something that, you know, he hasn't had to do. That will be a concern in the final five games of the series.
Byron, let's get to the Nats for a moment. 10 years into his career, Josh Harrison re-upped with Washington after playing 33 games and hitting about .280 for the Nats. Michael A. Taylor's out, so maybe he could be an extra outfielder. He can obviously play some infield as well. Did the contract terms mean that he's definitely going to be on the team, or is this like a flyer for spring training? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very team-friendly deal with $1 million plus $250,000 in incentives. And like you just said, Grant, he can do so much for this team. He was a breath of fresh air like Geraldo Parra was in 19, where this team was, you know, starting the season with a lot of injuries, and the Phillies let him go. And Mike Rizzo has always liked Josh Harrison. Davey Martinez talked about, you know, what a spark plug he was not only on the field, but what a spark plug he was in the clubhouse and kind of bringing everybody's attitude up. And it's like, you know, we can find a way to get going here. Obviously, it never happened for the Nats this year, but they really found something in this guy, a two-time All-Star who, as you said, he can play the outfield. He showed that, but also he's had a lot of experience at second and third, even played one game at first. And, you know, to have a right-handed utility guy like that, that is what Rizzo always loves to have. It's a question mark now of who else are they going to pick up? Would they bring back Brock Holt as well? I think when you see Harrison get this signing done with the Nationals, that kind of points to me that they're going to still, you know, the number one thing they're looking for in the offseason is a big bat, whether that's a left fielder or a first baseman or maybe even a third baseman. They need some power bats now as well. Harrison can do a lot of things. You know, he can hit a home run every once in a while, but they, you know, this proves to me that they're going to now turn their sights on a power bat.
BK, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it, dude. Enjoy your weekend.
All right, guys. Have a great day. Yep.
And that is your Beltway Blitz. World Series split through two games. Washington getting ready for Dallas. We just talked to Pete about this, but could we finally see things open up a little bit, even if only for a week because of a bad defense for Washington's offense? Are they good enough to take advantage of bad Dallas defense? Next on Grant and Danny. On Sunday, Washington welcomes the Cowboys to FedEx Field. They rank number 27 in the NFL in defense, giving up 410 yards per game, 25 of 32 teams in yards per play, over 6 yards per. Against the run, they rank 31st in both yards per game, 173, and per play over 5. Against the pass, they rank 18th and 23rd, yards per game, 237, and per play over 7. Only one team intercepts fewer passes per attempt than the Cowboys. 100 passes against them, less than 1% of the time would they pick it off, 0.51% so far this year. Sacks per pass attempt, another problem for Dallas, 19th of 32 teams. They get a sack every 5 or so plays out of every 100. Now, I'll tell you that they're getting healthier on their defensive line. They're welcoming Randy Gregory back. I think he was suspended again. It might have been an injury. I'm not really sure. But They do have better personnel off the edge than they have had this week, so that's good for them. Danny, first downs per game this defense, 26. They give up 24 of them. If you look at third down percentage on defense, 27th at getting off the field, 49% of the time teams convert. Red zone defense, 18th. Goal-to-go defense. They have not stopped the team once. How amazing is this? 100% of goal-to-go situations against Dallas have resulted in a touchdown this year. I almost can't believe that.
That's unbelievable.
First and goal from the 10 or closer. Not one time has anyone had to settle for a field goal. That is how you get to giving up 36 points per game, which is what they're doing. They've been outscored by 8 per contest. They've been outgained much of the season, although because their offense has come back in the second half of games, I think their net yards this year are actually, believe it or not, plus 54 with all the yards they've given up. But I just set the table with all those numbers to say this is a potential get-right game for this offense. This is the type of defense you lick your lips about if you're terrible on offense. This is what you dream about if you're a quarterback who's struggling, if you're an offense that can't get out of your own way, if you're a coordinator who people are coming down on. Is Washington good enough to take advantage of this terrible defense?
It better be. This is the worst defense they'll play this year by any metric. Okay, this is the among the bottom four teams in DVOA, so it takes into account, you know, hey, after a bad turnover where a team's only got to go a handful of yards to score a touchdown, which has happened a bunch of times against Dallas this year, as Zeke's put it on the deck, or interceptions, or whatever has happened. Taking all situations, all factors into account, this is a bottom four team in DVOA, basically comparing it to the rest of the league, okay? This is the worst defense this team will play. You had better be awesome in this game. This had better be the game that sustains your stats. This is the, you're going up against a position player pitching, because the second game of a doubleheader for a team that's played 9 games in 6 nights. This better be the game where you add up all of your accumulated stats and all your averages look a lot better after this week. Yards per attempt, yards per rush, some of the counting stats. Everybody should eat in this game. If they don't, we, rightfully so, can come in Monday morning and read everybody the Riot Act. This should be the get-right game of all get-right games. Whether you win or lose will depend on a lot of factors. This offense needs to be better than they've been at any point this season against this rotten defense.
And that's kind of the bar that I'm setting for them, is I want them to be better than that they have been. I don't expect them to go crazy here. I just don't think they're good enough. Adam Amin made this point when he was on the show with us, the Fox play-by-play voice who called their game this week and spent time with the staff this week. And I thought he said something that was smart. He said, there's no reason to expect them to go out and hang a bunch of 400-yard games or, you know, score 30-plus points. And I don't even know this week if that's all that realistic. But I think being in the high 300s, being in the mid-20s, that's reasonable. You've got Terry McLaurin, and now you're without two of your top four wide receivers. Now, Gandy Golden hadn't done much of anything anyway. Isaiah Wright had actually, oddly enough, become a factor on offense, not in terms of any kind of a game-breaking, you know, big play guy, but he was getting the jet sweeps. He was kind of replacing Steven Sims in the slot and running a lot of routes. And if they go to these two guys off the practice squad now and they have to run routes, that's odd. So maybe that means you've got to do more multiple tight end sets, or you have to split out Jeremy Sprinkle, God help us all, or something like that. I would not do that. I would just say, I don't know, this is crazy. Put J.D. McKissic in the slot. Put Antonio Gibson, who played college wide receiver, in the slot, and let those guys run some wide receiver-like routes, which he did in college. But I think I'm going to be realistic and not expect them to go have 496 yards and 46 points. I just don't think they can do that. But if the question is, can they play better than they have this season? Can they, quote-unquote, break out and maybe get close to 30? I think that's possible. I think it's going to take a big game from McLaurin, and it's going to take Gibson making a couple of big plays. Like, we keep hearing still about Antonio Gibson, and they got to use him more, and they got to get him the ball. I saw one of the fantasy guys I like yesterday posted a video of his best play of the season, Danny, which was that screen against the Ravens that went for like 40 yards. Uh-huh. You know the one I'm talking about where Gibson made a few guys miss?
Yep.
By far his best play of the season, right? And so, like, people are posting that going, please let him out of his cage. Please, like, free him. He's been freed. They're begging for him to make more plays. They would love to get him as involved as he will allow them to. McKissic has outplayed him twice in the last few weeks. And I'm an Antonio Gibson guy. It sounds like I'm bashing him. I'm not. But my point is, they are on their knees, like Wayne's World, begging for someone to make a play. Do you really think they're holding Antonio Gibson back? Absolutely not. So they're going to need him. I don't know if McKissick's capable, or McKissick and McLaurin. Two of those three guys has to kind of elevate them into that fringe top 12 offense in the sport this week kind of level, because they just don't – Logan Thomas ain't doing that.
No, he's
not. You know, some guy they just pull off the practice squad who's fast isn't doing that.
This needs to be – again, I'm gonna say it kind of a different way. A 400-yard offensive week. Dallas makes pedestrians, backups, third stringers look like superstars. Your best offensive output – I know they scored 27 points against Philadelphia. Very deceptive. And we said that even after the fact. We enjoyed the win. We're very happy they won the game. 3.1 yards per play in that game. That was the defensive line won them that football game with turnovers, sacks, great moments. This offense was a three-and-out machine in the first half, completely bailed out by that defense. Since then, their season high in points is 20, and they had 309 yards against the Cleveland Browns. They haven't topped 5.3 yards per play all season long. This needs to be an excellent offensive game. Again, they may not win it because Dallas is capable of scoring points as well. They have, the only time they haven't let up, talking about Dallas, 400 yards of offense was when they allowed 380 yards of offense in a game that they got blown out by any kind of they had a commanding deficit against the Falcons, and then things got crazy.
That's not completely true. So that was one of the games. They only gave up 300 yards to the Giants a couple weeks ago on the nose, which is a bad offensive team and kind of similar to Washington, honestly. And I look at that as the comparison here. I think it was 300 period, like on the dot.
It was 300 on the nose, yeah.
So when you hold the Falcons under 400, pretty incredible. I think that was more game script than game situation where they let off the gas pedal a little bit. But they're 2 weeks removed from a 300-yard game defensively, which would rank you toward the top of the league. They're capable of that against bad defenses. We just saw it. You look at Cleveland went for 508. They can run the ball in a way that Washington can't. Arizona went for 438 in a game where Kyler Murray, I thought, was just bad throwing the football. That could have easily been 500 on Monday night. The Rams in week one, 422. Those are better offenses. So to say they have to get to 400, I guess I don't really think of things that way anyway. Like, there's a benchmark, and if you don't get there, I got to see how the game played out. Did they lose a fumble? Did, you know, the Cowboys have a long couple of drives and they only got 11 plays and a half or something? We'll see. But the point is, I've seen what it looks like when their defense against a bad offense is pedestrian, and they held the Giants to 300 yards. They didn't make anything down the field work. They didn't have any explosive big plays. They had 62 plays and 4.8 yards per play, which is kind of like what Washington has done all season long. So that was just on October 11th, 11 days ago. I mean, that could happen again.
The Giants managed 300 yards in that game. You're right. I misspoke. There's an interception return for a touchdown in there. There were some other turnovers for Dallas that led to short fields. The Giants' offense could move the ball. And you're right. It's about how a game looks necessarily as opposed
but
to
But that could happen in this game, and they could end up with 317, and it's not your 400. You see what I'm
right,
saying?
Right. I'm just trying to of course. I'm just trying to offer the point. I need what it looks like typically ends up in multiple first downs, time of possession, moving the football with ease. The Giants, the worst offense in the sport, maybe beside from the Reds, Washington football team or the Jets, they moved the ball with ease in that game. Dallas did not stop them. The only thing that stopped them was an interception return for a touchdown so the Giants couldn't take the field. They probably would have gotten in and walked down and scored. You need to have that same look. And if you don't, we have to start asking questions. Everybody gets right against Dallas. Everybody gets to. The Giants' offense scored 27 points. Again, that pick six notwithstanding in that game to give them a total of 34. You need to be able to do that. You need to be able to move the football with ease, convert on third down, gash them all sorts of ways, have a couple big plays. It needs to look that way, or we get to ask questions.
Well, I think we should already be asking questions. You know what I mean? Like, their offense is bad, and they're 1-5. But, yeah, it gets worse if you don't move the ball against the Cowboys. Looking at the Giants' offense in that game, I'm pulling up the drive chart here. They had a 12-play drive for 38 yards. They kicked the field goal. 7-70 the first drive of the game. They went down and scored a touchdown. They only had one other touchdown on offense in the game on a 17-yard drive. So, to be honest, I mean, 5 plays, 15 yards. 5 plays, 17 yards. 3 plays, 4 yards, a 3 and out. 2 plays, minus 1, end of the half is a different thing. 4 plays, 4 yards, and a fumble. I mean, they moved the ball okay a couple times. They had two drives longer than 45 yards, it looks like, in that game. So they didn't move up and down the field, to be completely honest with you. But But they're terrible on offense, as we just saw. Now, they might be as terrible as Washington. So is that a precursor for things to come? 800-636-1067. Can Washington break out against Dallas? Are they good enough? If the offense is bad in this game, what does that mean? And Danny says it's time to ask more questions. What questions should we be asking? Let's get into that next. G&D, welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. Cowboys, Washington this weekend at FedEx Field. Dallas's defense is tumultuous. They are as bad as any in the league, and it's a get-right possibility for Washington's offense. A chance for Kyle Allen and this passing game led by Terry McLaurin, the running backs, Logan Thomas, to have a little bit more success and some running room. What we're wondering is, will they get untracked? So, Danny, let's make predictions. What should we set the over-under at? Should it be at, like, 374 or something like that? Where should we set this to guess whether they go over or under?
345. It would be their high for the year, which, again, is not a great total. Their highest yards in any game was against the Ravens, where they had 185 at halftime in the first half. So that would be, to me, the over-under. Do they set a new high for total yards this year at 345?
I think they do. I don't think they get to 400, because here's what I actually think is going to happen. From a game script standpoint, I think they get a couple of short fields. I think they get a sack fumble of Dalton. I believe they're going to get six or so sacks in this game, to be honest with you. I think the line for the Cowboys is a disaster. I'm not positive that they win. I think there's a really good chance that they do. But I think there's a sack fumble and a pick and a handful of sacks, something like that. So I could see two shorter fields, keep yards a little bit lower. You know, you get your bad offense series where you don't do anything in there. So I'll say they're going to be in the 370s, around 380. So I'll go over your 345.
I think it's a hair over. I think it's right there. I think it's right on point, like 350, something like that. It'll be their season high just because Dallas can't help themselves. They're just so bad on that side of the ball that even this gross offense, throwing it behind the line of scrimmage every time, will be able to accumulate some yards and first downs. The key is staying on the field. I mean, the Giants in that game that we keep referencing, because they mirror Washington, honestly, with how wretched their offense is, were 7 of 13 on third down. And that's kind of what Washington did this past week against that
I'll
Giants
take that.
Team. You could do that. You get yourself to those yardage totals.
So if they have a bad game on offense, let's do that. Dallas, you know, they're an NFL team. They kind of have some NFL players. They got Leighton Vander Esch back last week, who's their best linebacker possibly. Let's say they have their best performance and Washington has low 300 yards and 17 points or something like that. Normal week, kind of meh. But against Dallas, that would be, I think we can both agree, very disappointing. Mm-hmm. You said we need to start asking some questions. And I think it's on the table already at this point. Anything with this offense can be asked. It's now fair. But what do you mean by that? Define what you mean by we need to start asking questions.
Number one, can we all admit that playing Kyle Allen was a waste of time? That would be the first thing. The second thing I would ask is we need to start asking questions about Scott Turner. We're not putting a lot of deposits in the bank here in terms of you know, good quality play schemes and concepts. He was on a Zoom call the other day, and he kind of referenced something that's been out there. The smart analysts who look at some of the game tape are going, why do you have all these receivers bunched up in the same spot on these routes? That's not a very good concept. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And that trickles to reporters who do their job and ask him questions. And he kind of admitted, yeah, that hasn't been great. We'll clean that up. We need to start asking questions about Scott Turner at this point. Again, you shouldn't be a top five offense, a top 10, even a top 15 offense with this incredibly limited personnel. But it can't be like this. It can't be in a game that's this ripe for ball movement and for points and yards and first downs, as get right a game as they will give you on the schedule. If you don't do that, we need to start asking questions about the OC.
So I'll go in that order. First one, I don't know. I disagree. I don't know if that's going to be a question that'll get asked, possibly. I mean, I think there are two groups of people based on what we've seen from Kyle Allen so far. People who have seen that the offense is better and is sharper and that he's more accurate and an upgrade, and people who are butthurt that Dwayne Haskins got benched. I think those are the two groups that you've got. Now, if he's terrible in this game, maybe that opens the door. If he throws three picks and gives him no chance, okay, fine, possibly. But coming off of his first game that he's played in full, those are the two groups for me. Really, really obvious and clear for anyone with any kind of an open mind that watches that game and any of their other games before it. That's number one. Number two, on Turner, I think that's completely true. And we haven't, I guess, really done that yet. Maybe it's because it's early. Maybe it's because I'll just speak for myself. I think it's because of the lack of talent. Like, I don't want to say this guy can't do it when the talent is so bad for him. But I think it's completely fair to start questioning that because of the resume, Danny. He's very young. He hasn't really done it before. There's no deposits. You know me. I'm a deposits withdrawals guy, right? Like, where are my seasons where I can point to and say, yeah, see, he knows what he's doing? There are things I like about him from a kind of football paradigm standpoint. I like that he throws on first down. I like that he throws to the running backs. You know, there are just basic things that are understanding analytically of the way the NFL trends. But that, it doesn't get me a whole lot. So there's at some point you need results. And I think you're 100% right. If the offense is bad this week and they don't take advantage of Dallas, we'll now be a big bulk of the way into the season, Danny, where we don't really have anything on record of him watching the film and finding something. Like, isn't that what a good offensive coordinator does? He says, let's crush them with this. Let's find a way to take advantage of this deficiency. And he might say, if you gave him truth serum, I can't do that, guys. I don't have the talent to do that. And maybe he's right. I don't know. But at some point, I would like to see you find a way against a terrible defense to have a really good day because you came up with a really smart plan.
I would too. And again, I don't think they've got easy plays. It's like when, you know, Davey Martinez in the first half of last year calls down to the bullpen. There's no good answer. They don't have a good answer for the eighth inning. There's no good eighth inning answer for this Washington team. That just doesn't exist, but it's got to be better than it has been. But I do want to get back to your Kyle Allen point for your two columns. That's definitely one way to look at it. Here's the way I would look at it. People are so over Haskins that anybody that comes in afterwards is better, and they'll talk themselves in anything, even if it's this crappy quarterback carousel. The way the offense looked against Baltimore is the way the offense looked against the Rams and the way it looked against the Giants when they made an adjustment to throw closer to the line of scrimmage, and you're watching Kyle Allen do that. He probably does that better than Haskins does right now.
That's not probably.
Well, you look at the Ravens game. Haskins, they had 185 yards in the first half. Their
Understood.
Scoring output.
And he still missed a couple of those throws. It's just
sure,
not.
So did
I mean, one guy's
Allen
got an adjusted completion percentage
Allen
of over 80.
Passes.
One is at 65. It's not
Allen
probably.
Missed screen passes. Allen missed things, too, that were even closer to the line
okay.
of scrimmage. It's,
again,
it's
I'll point to the
so
numbers,
evident.
Which say one of those so guys on. Makes the throw much of the time and the other one doesn't.
Right. So when they did it this way, where they made their conversion to throw to the running backs and close to the line, Haskins had his best game. It's not good enough. No, nothing about the quarterback position has been good enough. But everyone's decided that because Haskins is done and stinks, and he does right now, by the way, that somehow anything Allen does is a breath of fresh air when it's, you know, just maybe a smidge better. That's
well,
not good
you're
enough.
Arguing with me, and I'll just tell you, I'm not saying it's a breath of fresh air. I'm saying he's better than Dwayne Haskins. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying Haskins is terrible, Allen's not good, and he's better. And I honestly don't know because I respect your football acumen. I know why a lot of people who on Twitter have hurt their feelings about Dwayne Haskins can watch that game and not acknowledge that it looks different and better. I'm surprised that you can't, to be honest with you.
I'm looking at the information. I look at the game script. I looked at the passes. I looked at how close to the line of scrimmage everything is, where Allen has the lowest air yards per attempt by design. It's smart. It's what they should be doing, by the way. When they did that for Haskins, he had his best game. And it wasn't good enough. I'm not, again, no one's telling you that it's good enough. But to me, the margin between the two when they play this way is so slim, you should be playing the first-round pick. And
even
I'll
if he's not showing – but you never acknowledge all the other – the reasons that he got benched.
Right, the leaks that we shouldn't know about.
So we're not allowed to know about those, and those should be private, and he should be playing anyway. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is they decided that they didn't like the guy, didn't want to do the work, didn't want to coach him, didn't want to do anything other than play their boy where they were so excited to give up a draft
and
pick.
And he's a victim like Robert Griffin was. How has that worked out? I mean, we had the same argument about Griffin when he got benched 6 years ago. He came off the bench for the Ravens this week.
This is not the same. Here's what is the same. And you can dismiss me all you want and condescend. That's your prerogative. Here's what is the same. They went to their Colt McCoy. They didn't have a Kirk Cousins. If they did, we could have that debate about who's better and who's got the upside. They went to the journeyman. They went to their guy that the offensive coordinator loves, and the difference between those two guys is nowhere near big enough to justify this for a team that's rebuilding and bad. So they're going to do what they do, which is throw the ball really short, get some completion percentages up, and all these some of the analytics and the numbers to look good. They started doing that against Baltimore, and now they've turned a corner, quote-unquote, offensively, where they've been better forget about that Rams game where they were an absolute disaster, by the way, and turned it over and had mostly three and outs with one scoring drive in the first half. But we celebrated it because it wasn't Haskins. This process
nobody celebrated. Well, who celebrated the Rams game?
You did. You told me that was the ball moved so much better. The ball moved
the
so
Rams
much better.
Game
in the first half when Kyle Allen did exactly what Haskins did, which is get one good drive with a bunch of three and outs and one five and out, aided by a personal foul penalty. You came in and said, well, I'd move much better without. It's just the ball moves better.
No, I said I would like to have seen more. He had a touchdown drive that looked better than a lot of their drives with Haskins. I'd like to see more than five drives before I make my
–
what I said the whole week was I'd like to see more than five drives to make up my mind on Kyle Allen. That's what I said.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Which I think is fair. This is now their offense. The biggest glaring difference, and it's obvious, is they moved away from one of the worst receivers in the sport, Logan Thomas. Low catch rate, low separation rate, and they featured now their running back starting in week number four. They're going to continue to do that, and they should. And it's going to make Allen look better as we go forward. So
we'll dismiss him looking better, but if he looks bad, we'll just say that it was Kyle Allen being bad.
I'm not dismissing it. I'm saying
if they're doing this thing to help him out, and he's bound to look better, right?
And they helped Haskins, and he looked better. They helped Haskins, and he looked better. That happened in week number four. They're helping Allen. It looked garbage for 1 week and good against the Giants. This is what they should do. It's smart. But to tell me this quarterback plays good enough and it justifies the switch, I'll never agree with. And if you don't put up tons of yards and points against the Cowboys, we need to have that conversation.
So the thing that I take out of that is that I think is true is you'll never agree with it. He could play well, never. And you won't agree with it. So that's where you're coming from. You're coming from they shouldn't have benched him rather than having an open mind about it, which
it's
is fine.
Very open.
No, you just said you'll never agree with the change. You'll never agree with going to him. You just said that.
One principle, fine. I'm speaking hyperbolic.
So you're coming from that they shouldn't have done it. But this is why I didn't want them to bench Haskins, and it's why I wouldn't have. Because we're still having this conversation. I wish they would have just played him for 16 games because it would have been very obvious at the end of this. Or maybe it wouldn't have. Maybe people would have said, well, the pandemic offseason, and he only had Terry McLaurin or whatever. But Kyle Allen is not very good, and their offense is still going to be bad. So they should have just kept playing Dwayne Haskins to make it really, 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 really clear. Because they drafted him at 15. And because of that, even though he wasn't the 15th pick in the draft, and most teams didn't have him in the first round on their boards, then because the owner basically wanted him because he went to Bullis High School, because of that selection, this is a conversation we're going to be having for a long, long time, regardless of the performance when he was on the field. We can keep chatting about this. We also have to get to our survivor picks on Grant and Danny this week. Week 7, who are we going to take? No against the spread picks. This is straight up. We'll do that on Grant and Danny on the Fan. All right, we'll make our survivor picks on Grant and Danny this segment. Frank Schwab of Yahoo coming up at the top of the hour at 1 o'clock. Before we move on, put a bow on our Haskins-Allen convo debate, whatever you want to call that. I got a former Washington football player here who texted me and said, the reason Haskins got benched was because he was not doing what he was supposed to do in the things that he had total control of. Similar to when Randy Whitman talked about JaVale McGee and Nick Young developing, Coach Whitman said if they continue to do things the wrong way, they are never going to develop. It's not about time. It's about my commitment to doing things it's going to take to be a professional day in and day out. That is the problem I have with your and it's not just you, but the general opinion of, because I think the theory that you're coming from is 100% correct. You have a first-round pick on your roster in year two. You have two guys that are not NFL starters, and you're playing one of them. And the other one's a backup, and the first-round pick's a third stringer. Blind ballot, that's egregious. It would boil my blood. And you're right, we should be upset about that. This doesn't work for that, though, because this guy, from what we know, and you say we shouldn't know it, and that's fine, but we do know it, doing things correctly behind the scenes. So the idea that you should just keep playing him over and over and over and over again, if that's the case, even though my plan coming into the year was to do that, I think it stands to read. You're like, well, Kyle Allen should never be on the field. Well, if you were the coach and he's doing all those things behind the scenes, what would you do? I guess you would just allow that to happen and keep playing him.
So I wouldn't make him the third-string quarterback and deactivate him and end the relationship and kill all the value. If you need to bench him for a couple weeks, I spoke hyperbolically. Well, he was sick for two games, so he was going to miss these games anyway, okay? But what I would do is say, hey, Dwayne needs to sit. And we support him. And behind the scenes, get in his face. Tell him, you can't do this crap. Coach, Do your job. Get like work with this immature kid that's been enabled and coddled all over the place. You did well in the offseason, apparently. They couldn't wait to tell us about that. And now they've leaked out, well, this is too hard. We just quit. So we'll play Kyle Allen. If you need to play Kyle Allen in an emergency, which you would have these past couple weeks because the kid's sick.
Yeah, but okay, the sickness notwithstanding, you were saying you basically never would go to Kyle Allen.
Right.
You're saying you would have benched him, though.
I would try not to. I'm saying I could live with, okay, we're going to make Dwayne second string, let him learn a little bit. Kyle's been in the system for a few years. We'll do that. That's fine. They made Dwayne Haskins the third string inactive street-close quarterback to throw with tight ends after practice to get any work in. So that, to me, ends it. It ends this,
yeah, I think
this
that's a big
kind
mistake.
Of conversation to say, well, it's about development. You still can develop somebody. I have no confidence that it'll ever work out for Haskins. There's a million red flags. But where is this team going? You can lose with Kyle Allen, or you can lose with Dwayne Haskins. One way, there's a sliver of hope that something good happens. The other way, you get Kyle Allen, and you get this journeyman that might run the offense a little bit better in the short term, which I don't care about. They do. That's why they leaked this crap about Haskins. They made him the third-string guy, effectively ended the relationship. If you had to sit him down for a couple weeks just trying to develop him, which would include, you know, coaching him and working with him and trying to, you know, get through to him that, hey, you can't do this. You don't own this job. You got to make sure that you're outworking everybody. You could do that. Instead, they chose to leak out bullcrap about him. It's not bullcrap. It's true, probably. But they chose to leak stuff to let everyone know, well, this is too hard. We wash our hands of it. It's not our fault.
But, Danny, if they would have benched him for the couple of weeks that you're saying that you would have, you know how that would have been perceived by fans, the terrible things that would have been said. They would have been crushed. They were, by the way, in the media when they first benched him, nationally and locally. So you just wear that and don't try to justify it in any way?
Well, you don't need to leak stuff out. That's end of regime type stuff. Ron Rivera's told us time and time again, he doesn't care what we think. So we could crush him all we want. He's still going to go for two or quiz his quarterback or not call a timeout when he's supposed to or do whatever he's going to do. He didn't care about us, and he shouldn't. He shouldn't have cared about us either before the season and done a Rosen and moved on. We could have griped about it, but we all said we want him to be able to choose. If you know after this small of a sample, you should have known four games before and gotten something for him. This is the worst-case scenario. The way that they did it is the worst thing that you can do. One way you get value. The other way, maybe you find something. They chose
I agree
neither.
With some of this, but the original point was Allen being on the field. And I guess I go back to, if I showed up late for shows all the time and left early and, you know, just did things that I wasn't supposed to be doing and CK allowed it, I think it would set a really bad tone. And I think it would probably lead to the show and the station and a lot of things kind of being worse off. There's a standard,
right,
particularly for quarterbacks, that needs to be held.
Agree
and
with all
I
that.
Know you're saying we shouldn't know it, but we do know it, that it wasn't happening.
Well,
so
let's play
that's
that got
to be part of the conversation.
It absolutely is, and it's a good analogy. Would CK work with you, or would he throw his hands up?
Yes,
well,
but
this guy's
you're
on a four-year
like
deal.
They haven't had conversations with him. You're pretending like they haven't been working with him for months.
Well, they chose not to. They literally just chose not to. They said,
after months
benching,
of doing it, sure.
Yeah.
Is there not a cutoff point where you go, you know what, we've told you five times on this throw, it's the running back against the linebacker, that's the whole reason. Hey, you know what, we told you five times, Alex Smith keeps getting here before you, and he's the third-string quarterback who's been in the league for 14 years.
There could be a cutoff point. More than four games, though, probably.
Okay.
For him, I would say. Maybe. I mean, just maybe a bigger sample for a guy that started 11 games and had better numbers than Kyle Allen through his 11 starts, I would say. Like, again, if CK walked in and inherited our show and you were doing all these terrible things that we now know that Haskins was doing, or I guess we supposed that he was doing, yeah, he should try to do whatever he can behind the scenes to fix it, to work with you. The last thing he should do is leak out, well, the reason Grant's not on the show anymore is because we just couldn't deal with it anymore.
Well, I'll bet he wouldn't leak it out until terrible things were said about his character and he was questioned nationally and locally for
days a guy that
on
doesn't
end.
Care a lot, he seems to care about that part, I guess.
I would care, too, if people were saying some of the things about me.
Right, that's why you're not Ron Rivera. He doesn't care. He's proven that he doesn't care.
All right.
That's part
fine.
Of what's great about him.
That's cool. Here's the big difference. For you, in some way, this is about Kyle Allen. I think it has nothing to do with Kyle Allen and everything to do with Dwayne Haskins. I don't think this has anything to do with them thinking Kyle Allen is good. I don't think that. We don't have time to get to the Survivor picks. We'll have to do it next hour. Frank Schwab of Yahoo is joining us. We'll be right back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.